stuff happens and it knocks you off guard and knocks you off balance, and it takes a little bit of time and practice to kind of regain your composure and go back to the outlook you had to begin with. For me, observing comes naturally, and it allows me to really think about what I'm saying and who I'm interacting with before I open my mouth and look completely stupid. It's one of those defense mechanisms, I guess. What I've also noticed is once I do lean in and talk to people, I really want to know who you are. I'm going to ask all those questions that make you think, even, you know, when you tell me your story, because I want to know. Something that we've lost as a culture, as a people, like a global set of people, we don't want to give up our trade secrets. We don't want to give up, you know, who our best people are. We're afraid of introducing a middleman, almost, because we don't want to be replaced by anybody. And I think that's really sad, because imagine what we could accomplish if all of us put our heads together and helped each other out. So yes, there is time if you see it that way. I found that a lot of times you get what you're looking for. It just depends on what you're looking for.
Today on American Real, we bring you Pika Rasaya, the founder of Rasath One, a brand she created to represent old world values and timeless virtues like patience, gratitude, and chivalry, combined with a deep spirituality. Her mission is to teach self-awareness and promoting stronger, more transparent relationships. Pika is also the host of her podcast, Night Owl, which is available on SoundCloud, and where she recently released her 400th episode. And now, without further ado, I bring to you Pika Rasaya. This is American Real. I am Roger Brooks. My guest today is Pika Rasaya. You have a BA in psychology, a master's in education, and spent 15 years in the service industry while living in 5 different countries and raising children. You say you decided that the best way to affect change was to personify your ideals in the form of a brand. Your business is Rasath One. Pika, you are also a graduate and member of our live tribe, and it's so great to connect with you today from Singapore. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Roger. I really appreciate the time.
Oh, likewise. And we've been talking about doing this for a few months now, and I'm really happy that we finally made this happen. It's Friday morning there. It's Thursday evening here. You've lived in the States. You've lived all over the world. But tell us about Singapore. What is it like living there? And I guess most of our viewers are probably in the U.S. and the U.K. So what would be the difference?
The weather. It's perpetual summer here. But it's not like New York summers. It's not like it's not like Virginia summers. I grew up in Virginia. I was there for about 20 years. But the difference being that there's a lot more humidity. So where it may be, let's say, 95 degrees Fahrenheit out there, I have 80% humidity plus that same degree of heat. So it makes you wonder if you should really take a shower and go outside, because you're just going to start sweating immediately. It's different.
So where in the U.S. would you compare it to as far as the climate is concerned?
Probably closer to Florida, maybe Miami.
So it's very warm all the time, all
year
round.
It's very humid. Yeah, all year round. We have two seasons. We have a hot season and we have a rainy season. But other than that, yeah, that's it.
Great. And tell us where you've lived. I mean, five countries, not too many people could say they've lived in five countries at such a young age. Where have you lived?
Yeah, I was born here in Singapore, and I left when I was five. And because my father was studying in London, we moved to London. I was in London for about 2 years. And once he graduated from university, we moved to Australia. So I lived in Brisbane, which is in Queensland, for about 4 years. But even then, I moved around a lot with the schooling and everything. And then finally, we moved to Adelaide, which is South Australia. So total about 5 years in Australia. He got a better job offer in Indonesia, so we moved to Indonesia. I worked. I went to Jakarta International School for a year. And when summer rolled around, because that school year is the same as the U.S.'s school year, whereas all the other countries are from February until November, basically. So it was a little bit of a switch around. And that school was the first school I'd ever been to that didn't have a uniform. So once summer hit, my dad was like, well, his mom is in the States. We haven't seen her in many years. Why don't we go visit? So what started out as summer vacation ended up being 20 years in the States. I was in Virginia the whole time.
No kidding. And where is your most favorite place to live?
I probably will say Singapore right now because the transportation is amazing. I don't need a car. I'm pretty self-sufficient with everything that I have. I'm very lucky to be able to live in my mom's house. But outside of that, yes, they say it's a very, very expensive city to live in. But that's because if you want a car, it's super expensive. If you want to buy a house, that's super expensive. But outside of that, it's actually pretty reasonable. Groceries, even though we don't have any land to speak of where we could farm, everything is imported. So groceries are pretty comparable to Food Lion in Virginia. Meat obviously is expensive. The things you wouldn't expect to be expensive are, like, makeup is expensive. Shampoo is expensive. Like, those kinds of things are weird. They're expensive. But it's helped me because I'm a single mom and I'm trying to do everything on my own. So I'm able to get anywhere in Singapore without too much trouble. The public transportation system is amazing.
Tell us about the population there.
Very mixed population. We have a lot of what everyone here will call foreigners, which are people who are not either Indian, Chinese, or Malay. So we have a lot of people who, big corporations like Bank of America is here, Standard Chartered, a lot of the banks out throughout Asia, a lot of the Australian companies, all of them have a base here, like Deloitte and Touche is out here, a lot of different companies. So they have people who will come for a time. They don't technically live here permanently, but they'll come for like a contract of 2-3 years, and then they move on to whatever the next country is. So yeah, we do have a lot of foreigners, a lot of Africans. We have a lot of people from all over Europe, a lot of Americans as well. So it's a very mixed population.
And Pika, how would you say your global life has prepared you for life? Do you feel that the experience of living all over the world has broaden your views,
absolutely.
More education, et cetera.
If it didn't, I was doing something wrong. honestly, I didn't like it. I hated it at the time. I did not want to be the new kid in school. I hated being, you know, bullied for being the teacher's pet because that's where I was comfortable. That was the one constant throughout wherever I lived. I could, you know, go to school and excel in school. But being able to live in a country rather than just visit for a little short amount of time means that I get to really immerse myself in the culture, really get to know how things are done, how things are said, you know, colloquialisms, slang, all of that stuff is actually, it's different when you actually live there. So I've been able to, honestly, I don't think I've ever met anyone that I couldn't strike up a conversation with and find something that, you know, that some similarity that we can talk about because of that.
And I don't have a hard time believing that. That's for sure. Now, what about the language in Singapore? What are the main languages?
Main language is English. But in school, my daughter is in second grade right now, and she's already, it's her second year of taking a second language. So they start from very early age. They encourage you to learn more about your own culture. So in school, they offer Chinese, Malay, and Tamil, Chinese being Mandarin. And, you know, teaching to speak and write and present in front of the class, all that started with first grade already. So they're very, very, they're very efficient as far as trying to make sure that the standards are very high and then you're able to move around within the community in Singapore because you speak another language as well.
That's fantastic. My son's in seventh grade. He's in seventh grade in middle school and he is taking Mandarin right now.
And wow.
Really enjoying it. He's doing well.
Yeah. And, it's a difficult language.
It is. And for some reason, his teacher told him that he's doing very well. He's picking it up. So hopefully it'll be something he sticks with. You know, he could do that right through high school.
I think it'd be very helpful. Yeah. Yeah. I see that not only Spanish, but Mandarin is also picking up, where you may need to speak one or both of those languages to kind of make it through as in the industrial age carries on.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit more about your story and who you are as a person. I've gotten to know you pretty well through all of your live videos within the Live Tribe. And I guess let's start there. How were you introduced to American Real? And
Ebony. Eb actually introduced me. I was in another coaching group with her, and she mentioned that she was being interviewed by you. And I don't know, it kind of just took off from there. And then eventually she was like, you know, they're also introducing new people into the group. Why don't you try it? And I will say this, from the time that I was added to the group to the first live that I did, I think I did a lot of thinking. I thought too much. I think it took me maybe a week before I did my first live. But then after that, it wasn't so bad. And she did it at a time where I was still not really comfortable being on camera. I had done Periscope courses to teach, and it was maybe 15 minutes at a time to teach the same group that I was a part of, and they would join us on Periscope. So it was a closed group. Not many people were using Periscope at the time, so I wasn't in danger of actually meeting new people, having to interact. So this was different. And it was a nice change of pace. And the group, the community you've created in there, they're very accepting, they're very kind, and they're very encouraging. So whether I was nervous on camera or not, or whether I said it, they were very willing to like and comment on the post and give me encouragement wherever they saw fit. So whatever I happened to be talking about that day, whoever had a chance to see it would immediately join in and send me some love, basically to show me that I'm not alone. These things happen to most everybody. It's just a matter of, you know, pushing through and getting to where you need to be the next day for the next live.
That's great. Yeah. And for people that don't know, our live video group is, we start out as a 21-day challenge. So you get on there, you do a live video for 21 straight days for 1 minute. And as easy as that sounds, you know, you and I both hear that, you know, at first and say, that can't be that hard, but it is. It's challenging. It's challenging to show up. It's challenging to hold yourself accountable. But there's something that happens naturally, at least it did for me, and I believe it did for you, in the process, that it's hard to explain until you do it. But it for me, it changed my perspective on live video, on social media in general, and how to interact and communicate with people.
And for me, I'm just going to add on to what you said, where a minute doesn't sound that long and you really don't have any excuse. You could find a spare minute anywhere throughout the day. But for me, it became one of those things where I had to really think about what I was saying, because I was conscious of that minute. We were trying really hard to hit a minute and not go over. And that was a challenge when I started. So at first I was thinking, what could I possibly say in a minute? And then suddenly I get on live and I'm realizing I could say a lot. And then it's like, how do I not ramble and really come with a clear message? So for me, it kind of perfected my elevator pitch. And I really appreciate the fact that everyone was so encouraging, and the cycle of 21 days every day, it really makes you get used to being on camera. It would be like, I would look forward to it, and I would think about what I wanted to say, like, throughout the day preceding that actual live 1 minute video.
And where did your biggest resistance come, if any, during the process, especially during the first 21 days and then thereafter?
I think the first two cycles went without much trouble. I was cognizant of what I knew what I wanted to accomplish. And I think my best cycle to date is cycle two. I had the most engagement. I think I was able to really communicate with the group, and they were communicating back. So we would have like 5 to 10 comments on every one of our posts, because we were tight knit like that. And I really appreciated it. My biggest challenge was, how do I get on camera when I'm upset about something or I'm not feeling so great and not have that translate to the audience? Because the last thing I want is to transfer that kind of energy to anybody. If I can't see straight out of a situation, and this is something I'm teaching as well, stuff happens and it knocks you off guard and knocks you off balance. And it takes a little bit of time and practice to kind of regain your composure and go back to the outlook you had to begin with. And for me, that's where that big gap, I think I stopped for a whole month, because I could not see myself out of the situation. But that was also like a red flag for me on the outside in my real life, that where I was working at the time, I had to get out of there because it was changing who I was on an energetic level. The way I received my daughter after school, the way I spoke to everybody, there was a bitterness. I was not as, you know, happy and open and welcoming as I usually am, and I didn't like it. So I just didn't get on camera. I didn't want to send that anywhere. Why would I send that kind of energy to anyone? So that was my biggest resistance.
as you're talking about that, it makes me think about celebrities, athletes, people that have to show up every day, whether they like it or not. And I never thought of it in that way, but you're right. You know, committing to a group like this, you have to show up. And whether you're having a bad day, whether you're sick, whether something bad happened, you still have to show up. And it's, I think it's really good practice. So appreciate you very much.
It's all about game face.
That's right. It's right. And there's something to that, because whether you're in sales or whether it doesn't matter what business you're in, there are going to be those days that we all have, and we have to put our game face on. And I never really heard it put that way. So I appreciate you talking about that and shedding some light on your experience.
Thank you.
So great. So let's talk about your love to observe and connect people. You're a connector.
I am. I do love that. I observe because, believe it or not, I'm actually a very shy introvert. Because I moved around so much, I wasn't, I think the most outgoing I was probably 0 to 5 years old, because I was in the same country and I knew everything around me. But once I started moving around, I walled up and I kind of tried to stay as close to the wall as possible and not, you know, not ruffle feathers, not get in anyone's way. So what I learned to do is observe. And that's one of those superpowers that I'd like to consider that I have, because with every new school, I got to reinvent myself. So what I would do is I would observe what worked in the previous school, you know, all the popular kids and what were they doing and how do they get friends and how do I emulate some of those qualities without being completely fake. And I mean, even then I was like very nervous and didn't want to talk to people if I could help it. So for me, observing comes naturally, and it allows me to really think about what I'm saying and who I'm interacting with before I open my mouth and look completely stupid. It's one of those defense mechanisms, I guess. What I've also noticed is once I do lean in and talk to people, I really want to know who you are. I'm going to ask all those questions that make you think, even, you know, when you tell me your story, because I want to know how you feel. What drove you to do whatever it is that you're doing now? How did you overcome whatever obstacle that was placed in your path? And as I dig through those stories, I find that certain people have certain similarities. So once I got to know your group, once I got to know you a little bit more, once I got to know Ebony a little bit more, anytime y'all say something, I think there were a couple times where you got on live and you said, hey, I am dealing with this. And suddenly there would be like an image that pops in my head and I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to introduce him to so-and-so because they have what he needs. So that's where I come from. I want to make sure that I have a network of people who are true to their word, good at what they do. And if I hear of anybody that has any kind of trouble or is dealing with some kind of an issue, if I can't help you, that means I know who to refer you to next. And I think that is something that we've lost as a culture, as a people, like a global set of people. We don't want to give up our trade secrets. We don't want to give up, you know, who our best people are. We're afraid of introducing a middleman, almost, because we don't want to be replaced by anybody. And I think that's really sad, because imagine what we could accomplish if all of us put our heads together and helped each other out.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting you're talking about this, because first of all, one of the first things I noticed about you when we met is that you offered service first. How could I be of service to you? And I'm hearing more and more people say that today. And I don't know if it's just being more aware on my end or just being connected to more like-minded people, but I think that's a fantastic trait, thinking service first and knowing that deep down things will come back in return if you do that. And it may not be with that person. It may come from another source or wherever it may be, but
I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah. So, and look, I mean, you're right. We have been conditioned. I have been conditioned my entire business career to be selfish, to be, you know, tunnel vision. And my world has completely changed ever since I got into podcasting.
Yep.
It's been flipped upside down where it's, you know, and it started with Brian Rose. I took his class in London Real Academy. I wanted to use the name American Real. I asked him how much I owed him to use the name. And he said, are you kidding me? It would be an honor. It's free. Just do me proud. So that started my path on changing my thinking, exactly what you said, that there's still a lot of people that want to hoard their contacts. And I'm seeing much more return by doing the opposite, by giving out as much free content as I can. And I know you will talk about that in a little bit. You've been giving a lot of content away, but you know, I'm starting to see the rewards, and I'd like to know where did that come from? Where did that come from in your teaching? Is it
I will say that there are two main influences. Yes, being in hospitality, you see, you know, you have to give service first. I worked at Wyndham Worldwide. I worked at Kingsmill Resort and Spa, which is a golf resort in Virginia. I worked at the Grand Hyatt here in Singapore. And everywhere I go, I feel like if I can help someone first, obviously that also means that they would be comfortable coming to me if they needed anything going forward. And knowledge is free. What right do I have to hoard onto it? If I can make your life easier by telling you one thing, why not? It's not going to kill me. And what I've also learned is, like you said, giving because you can, it returns to you tenfold. A lot of times, I have been helped by the kindness of strangers more times than I would like to admit, mostly because I didn't know who to turn to, and I just happened to say it out loud or, you know, mention it in passing, and someone was like, you know what, I have a solution for that. So It's an idea that I've been raised with, and it's been confirmed and reaffirmed in hospitality and then in the way that, you know, things work out for me in general. The major life influence for me, though, was when I moved to the U.S., I moved to Virginia, as you know, but what I didn't mention was where in Virginia I moved. I moved to a place called Yogaville. It's in the middle of Buckingham County. It's actually Satchidananda Ashram, but on the map it's Yogaville. And it was an ashram started by Sri Swami Satchidananda, and I'm actually very lucky to have had him as a major influence throughout my life. He was a very close family friend. He and my grandmother moved to the U.S. together. They were both in Sri Lanka at the time they moved to the U.S., and he has done phenomenal work opening integral yoga institutes all over the world. I have friends in Hong Kong as a result, the New York Integral Yoga Institute, the San Francisco, and Yogaville. Like, there's so many different locations that you can go and, you know, check out his teachings. And his major teaching was that the truth is one, but the paths to it are many. It was a very inclusive idea, and to this day is at the core of who I am, because I realize it in everyday life. Just because you like the idea of 3 + 5 making 8, doesn't mean that my idea of 4 + 4 making 8 is wrong. It's not. It's just another way to get to 8. And that's how I see religion. That's how I see culture. That's how I see different family units and how they get to their end result of successful children, self-sufficient children. You know, it's all the same. It's just what works for you is what matters.
That's incredible. And would you say, how old were you when this took place?
I moved to the States when I was 14.
And you were at that school for how long? Right through the high school?
How long did I live in Yogaville? I lived there for about 10 years. I was there for high school and part of college. I mean, yeah, I didn't live in Yogaville at the time, but when I came home, that was home. I'd come home to Yogaville.
Yeah, incredible. So, Pika, that leads me to my next question, and that is that you believe love is the cure to everything.
I do.
What a great thing. Talk about that.
I think love is at the heart of everything we hold dear. It's when you love yourself, you're confident. When you love other people, you are empathetic and you're considerate. Let's talk about fear instead. Fear is a lack of love. I feel like fear is at the heart of a lot of uncomfortable feelings like jealousy and anger. All of those things come from fear. Fear that someone may not accept you. Fear that someone may leave you. Fear that someone, you know, may not be who they say they are. All of those things, that insecurity comes from fear. And I feel like love really does help you see the world in a different light and helps you become a light yourself. I wasn't always like this. There were times where I just couldn't see my way out of it. I wasn't sure if I could love myself, because I kept telling myself that I was unworthy based on situations that I lived through. So my mom was very strict. I come from an Indian family. East meets West, because I was raised in the West, but then I had to be Eastern and behave Eastern, even though I was in the West, and that was difficult, which means the way I dress, the way I speak. For example, living in Yogaville, lucky for me, they're very Asian-oriented as well, and they have Sanskrit names, most of them. They've asked to be initiated that way, and it's really nice. But even so, they are American people. They were born and raised in America. So if I come up to you and I've never met you before and I call you Auntie so-and-so or Uncle so-and-so, it sounds strange. And their children look at me like, do I know you? Why are you talking to us like that? So there were a lot of adjustments I had to make. Almost like a double life. So I was very, very Eastern at home, because that's where my mother was checking to see if I was Eastern or not. But in order to adapt, adjust, accommodate when I was in school, I had to make it without being bullied to death. So I would do what within reason, what everyone else was doing, everyone else that was my age, so that I wouldn't be ostracized. Because, I mean, I wanted to be included. I was afraid of being too weird, and I was afraid of being too different to be included in the high school culture. As it is, high school is hard, and you don't have to be from a different country to be different or difficult or treated differently. So it was just another one of those things that I had to kind of learn to manage. Fast forward to now, though, and I'm finished dealing with a divorce. I have raised stepchildren. I have I've made a lot of things work that I wasn't sure that would work very well. And a lot of that is because I love. A lot of that is because I've seen different situations in my life. I've lived through a lot of things. I've seen different cultures and how they deal with various situations. So when I encounter people who are hurt or upset or playing the victim at the time because they don't see another way how to do this, what they want is the attention, and that's the best way they know how to get it, I can be empathetic enough to at least get to the heart of the problem. If I show you love, it means that I am taking into consideration your feelings. I realize that this is not who you are. It's a reaction to whatever is going on in your life at the moment, and that you have the choice to adjust eventually. It's just a matter of, are you willing to hear me out and listen to a different point of view so you can see that there is another way? And a lot of times I use my own life as examples. If I can tell you a story about my childhood that might help you see your way around the situation you're going through now, then that's what I want to do. I want to share what I've lived through, because I am an open book. There's nothing I can't talk about, as long as it's relevant to you and your happiness and your journey through life. You're not alone.
Wow. I put up a quote today, and I'd just like to read it to you and get your take. It says, sure. The enemy is fear. We think it is hate, but it is fear.
Exactly. So what is hate? Hate is the idea that you are afraid of what those people may think of you. You're afraid of being judged. You're afraid of being put aside. You're afraid of not being needed. You're afraid of any one of those things. And it's because of a lack of love. So let's look at it from a racism point of view. Why is there an idea that one color is better than another? Most times it's the fear that that other race of color is able to do what you are able to do, and they may take away your job or they may replace you in some capacity. But that has nothing to do with the color itself. It's just how you feel about yourself. Because if you felt that no matter what happens, you'd be able to find a job, you'd be able to make money, you'd be able to make a living, what does color have to do with anything?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes. And you touched on earlier, you mentioned playing victim. I'd like to get your thoughts more on that, as, again, we've been conditioned depending on our upbringing, but many, many people have been conditioned to play that victim card. And it sounds to me as if you don't see that at all. You take full responsibility. You hold yourself accountable, and you're not playing that victim card.
And that's not to say I didn't. I did at several points in my life. Even when I left my husband 5 years ago and I moved halfway around the world with my two-year-old, yeah, I played the victim for a little while. I didn't come out of my room. I watched Scandal reruns because I couldn't believe that this had happened to me. I couldn't believe that I had failed at this. And no one said I failed. I was telling myself. So for a little while, I was listening to my own voice telling myself that, you know, well, your marriage didn't work out. Obviously, that means that you failed. Obviously, it means that if he can replace you so quickly, that you were never that good to begin with. And it's the things that I'm telling myself. No one ever said that to me. He never said that to me. I was telling myself. I was justifying why things were happening the way that they were. And eventually, it took me understanding that I was the reason for my misery, and I was the one putting myself down first before I could see my way out of it. It's actually really tragic. We tell ourselves a lot of different things, and sometimes it's, what's that word? You're basically quoting something someone said in passing one time, and because you believe it at the time, you could continually tell yourself. Maybe someone at some point in your life told you that you were fat, and where you're not actually fat, but you see it now because someone brought it up to your attention, and you were already feeling about your body. So now whenever you don't feel good about a situation, you use that as an excuse for why you feel that way as well. Well, you're fat, so of course you can't do this. You're fat because, you know, of course you can't see your way out of this, and you can't get a boyfriend, and you can't. All the stupid things you're telling yourself. We're running a program written by us in our minds. That mindset game is a lot harder than most people will give us credit for, because we're in our heads all day long. When I talk about meditation, it's meant to be that you focus on one thought, just one thought, for a little while. And that's harder than you think, because if I tell you to focus on the color red, sure, you'll think about the color red for a little while, and then you think about, oh, well, you know, Chinese New Year, that's the color that, you know, people use on Chinese New Year, and yeah, this year is the year of the pig, and I wonder who else wanted the year of the pig, and from there, you just, like, you're off on a tangent, and it has nothing to do with anything, but you were meant to think about the color red. So imagine, if you will, you have one thing that happens to you. It's neither good nor bad, but you assign it value. And based on that value and how you feel about that value, you tell yourself over and over again, okay, well, I didn't get that job because I wasn't good enough. I wasn't pretty enough. I didn't have enough certifications. I didn't, you know, whatever. You justify the whole thing. But the fact that you didn't get that job isn't good or bad. It just is.
Yeah, and I actually listened to Ed Milet today, and he was talking about this very topic that, yes, it's the things that we tell ourselves all day long, and it's toxic. So,
and it's all day.
And it's all day long. So why not take control of that and start easy? Start by writing down some things that you want to be, who you really are, and continue to tell yourself that, because eventually, if you do that every single day, you'll form a habit, you know, very similar to our live tribe, that you get in that habit of telling yourself you are successful. I am pretty. I am at my ideal weight.
That's why affirmations work. And then once the affirmations work, then that's where, you know, meditation works, and all these things, all of them come together. It's not one practice that fixes everything. It's a lot of different practices that fix everything.
And Pika, our subconscious mind doesn't know the difference, right? And again, these are things that I have not known my entire life. It's just been the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years where I'm more aware of this, but it's true. You know, our subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between a thought and reality.
And real life.
That's right.
And let's talk about proof of that. You can have an idea about something, and someone can tell you it's a bad idea. And then you start ruminating on the fact that, why is it a bad idea? How did it come about? And the more you think about it, every time someone mentions that idea, you'll get a pit in your stomach, or you'll feel your chest constrict, or it will manifest in your body because you are causing yourself that stress. The same thing about, you know, if you dread going to work. How many of us have called out sick because we physically feel sick at the thought of going to work? But there's nothing wrong with the work. It's just work. And there's nothing wrong with those people. They're just people. It's how you feel about it. Your feelings mean so much more than people realize. And that's where mindset really helps to release some of those feelings. I'm not saying don't feel. I'm saying please feel. Don't ignore the feeling because they happen for a reason. But sometimes those feelings come from somewhere else, another place in your life where you felt that way. It's like, hey, I remember that feeling. This is what's going to happen. So when people say, you know, I broke up with this person, I don't want to bring any baggage. They have baggage. That's what that means. You are expecting the new person to have similar behaviors and similar reactions to the previous relationships that you have because you have a frame of reference based on those relationships. So we never really start with a clear slate, although we could, but it would take a lot of internal work to get to that place where you are calm and you are happy. And no matter what happens in your life, it takes a lot for you to be knocked off balance. But a lot of times, as women, we don't see the need or the importance of taking that time out in between relationships to really fix what we can fix about ourselves. I'm not saying it's all us and that's why, you know, we have to fix ourselves. I can't control you and I can't control my ex-husband. I can only control me. My thoughts, my actions belong to me. I can't control anything else. So if at least I can worry about the things that I have done and the things that I can change and the way I think about those things and the way I feel about those things, then that's about as close to a clear slate as I'm going to get for the next relationship. But a lot of people jump from one to the other and there's no time in between to really heal the things you need to heal. You need to heal.
So what do you say to a person who is in that dark place right now? They don't know where to turn.
If I had to speak to someone right now, client or not, friend or not, I would ask them what happened, and I would ask them to write down how they feel about it so they can see it on paper. Because whether they realize it or not, the things that they tell them themselves are toxic. And once you write it down, it looks strange. Once you write it down, you look at it, you're like, I'm saying this to myself 12,000 times a day. Of course I feel terrible. So if you wouldn't allow bullying to happen in front of you, if you would stand up and say something, why would you allow yourself to bully yourself? Yeah, okay, we could be our own worst critics. Okay, great. If that's going to motivate you to be better, okay, fine. But a lot of times it makes us want to curl up and crawl into a dark place and just leave the world behind because we don't feel good. What I found is if I can actually get myself out of bed and get out the door and go walk around, meet people, have random conversations, at some point, the answer that I'm looking for will be presented to me. So you don't have to do this alone. Everyone has their own trauma. Everyone has their own cross to bear. And yes, it will look different from yours. But a lot of times it's the way you're carrying it. Right. It's not the cross itself.
Oh, I like that. You say that I know that everything I survived has brought me to this moment where I know that I'm meant to help others heal by showing them what you've learned. What do you mean by that?
I really believe that if anything had changed along the way, if I had had it easy in any one of those areas of my life, I wouldn't be who I am right now. If I'd had an easy childhood, if I'd lived in the same community all my life, if I'd never traveled outside of Singapore, I would not be as inclined to help people as I am right now. I would probably be happy to have a job, drink on Friday night, Netflix and chill my way through life. But it's because I've struggled, and I think a lot of people will understand this. It's because, let's go Captain America, shall we? It's because Captain America couldn't have those things as a regular man. He wasn't built for it. He didn't have the stamina, but he didn't stop trying. But because he knows what it's like not to be able to help and you really want to, that when he had the ability to help, he did all he could. He went all out all the time. I needed a lot of help. I didn't know who to ask because we come from an Asian culture. It's not nice to talk about what happens within the four walls of your house, outside of the four walls of your house. But what I realized was everyone has that saying. As you see all these memes coming up now, we all grew up that way, all of us. We weren't allowed to talk about what happened. We weren't allowed to point fingers at people who hurt us, especially if they're within the family itself. We weren't allowed to tell on people because that had backlash for us in school. But everyone went through that at one place or another. And because I've seen so much of it, I've come to a better understanding of human experience. And I feel like you should never have to suffer in silence. You should never have to feel like you're lost and don't have anywhere to turn. Yes, I survived it, but not everyone can pull themselves out. Some people need a helping hand. And because I've been there, I can sit with you in the dark for a little while. I can hold your hand in the dark for a little while. And then I'm going to slowly encourage you to come out, because nothing gets done there. Nothing changes there. You're in your own little world, and you've walled yourself off from everything that's hurt you because you want to protect yourself from that pain. You're afraid. But if you allow someone to sit with you for a little while and you slowly work on coming back out, there's another way to see the world. Now, there have been some major traumas in life. I know some of my brother's friends, they've dealt with rape. They've dealt with physical abuse, just random muggings, like all kinds of stuff. And I've spoken to all of those people. Not everyone can get angry and fix it. A lot of people really do just get afraid. A lot of people really do just want to retreat from everything. I don't want this to happen ever again. I'm not doing anything that will ever put me in that position again. And I understand that. But that's when you need someone who's been there a little bit to let you know that, okay, I see where you are. I understand where you are. But nothing's going to change if you stay here.
So you say you didn't know where to turn, but you healed. What? How did you do it? Where did you go?
Like I mentioned before, the kindness of strangers. So what I've gotten really good about doing is compartmentalizing a lot of my pain, because you have to have your game face on for all of these family functions and all these things, and you're not allowed to talk about any of the things that go on in your family, even if it's family. You know, it's family. You're supposed to be able to be yourself around those people. So sometimes, for example, the live tribe, when you can say what's on your mind, knowing that the person you're talking about is not listening, it means that you can get someone else's perspective about whether you're freaking about dumb things, or if you have a legitimate reason to be upset, if you've made it bigger in your mind than it actually is, or if it really is a problem. Now, chances are there is a problem, but how big the problem is sometimes depends on how you think about it, right? So it was the kindness of strangers. There were people throughout my life that I was able to confide in, and not the whole truth, but little pieces of the truth, so I could make sure that I'm not losing my mind. I'm not upset over nothing. This is something that I have a legitimate excuse to be upset about. But then it comes down to, okay, what am I going to do about it? Am I just going to let it be? Am I going to confront it? Am I going to let it go? Is it worth confronting a situation? Will it actually affect change, or will it just be, you know, will it fall on deaf ears and I just got to keep on doing it anyway? So the kindness of strangers.
That's wonderful. There's still hope for the world.
Of course there's hope for the world. We just got to see it that way.
That's right. No, and look, in all seriousness, I think we're living in the greatest time ever. And I think we're on to a massive positive change. And The reason I feel this is I'm part of it, you know, and you're part of it. And a lot of the people that are listening and watching are part of it. And it's happening very quickly. So The signs are out there, and yes, there's a lot of people in this world, and the shift is happening, and we're just lucky to be alive. We're very, very fortunate to be living in this moment in time.
The amount of resources we have available to us are by far the best we've ever had. And yeah, of course, there are like some that aren't as genuine as you'd like them to be. But the point is, if you needed an answer, you can look for it. Yeah, but you can definitely ask for answers. You can definitely reach out to people. There are more coaches and mentors and people willing to share their stories than ever before. And it's actually more accepted than it was before as well. Stories of Asian women was something completely taboo, but there are a lot of women who have stepped up and they've paved the way for the rest of us, so that whether we're Asian women or just women in general, or men that are affected by whatever violence is out there, war, all of those things, people have paved the way for us to be able to speak up and share our stories, because the more stories that are out there, the less alone most of us feel.
That's right. That's exactly right. Pika, if you were to take out your cell phone right now and call the 20-year-old Pika, what would you say?
It's not as bad as you think, and all of this serves a purpose. Yes, you could have made different decisions, but that wouldn't change who you're supposed to be. So keep healing. Keep sharing the love. Sharing love is never wrong. Keep helping people along the way. Keep being yourself. Don't change for anybody. I have a habit of changing for people.
So let's talk about your business.
Okay.
Tell us what you do. And tell us about your podcast and what you do there. You've had hundreds of episodes that you've recorded.
Yes.
Can you share some of that?
So let's start at the beginning, shall we? I've always wanted to own my own business. As much as I love working for other people, I get to a point at some instance that what I would like to do to help you grow is not what you want to help yourself grow. And while a lot of people are saying, you know, you hire the best people you can around you, most business owners are happy to find yes people to just say yes to everything they have an idea about. So I'm not that girl. I can't not be genuine and tell you what I think, because I think we can grow faster if we really discuss ideas. So eventually what happened is I decided I wanted to start my own business, but I wasn't sure where to start. Most people are like, okay, what product can I sell and how do I start a business that way? But for me, because I didn't have a product and I didn't know where to start to even, you know, create a product, I decided that I like who I am. And I'm just going to start posting Instagram quotes. I started in 2013. Yeah, 2013, 2011 maybe. But I started posting quotes that would help me remember that the power is in my hands to change my life. So to put it into context, I was just leaving my relationship. I had just left my 2-step kids behind. I had a 2-year-old with me in a country that has changed so much, I might as well just learn from scratch. And I felt very alone and very afraid, and I wasn't sure if I could do it by myself. We've been ingrained with this idea that you have to have a mother and a father to raise a child, and I did the best I could to kind of create that, but it wasn't in the cards for me. So here I was, single mom, with a stroller under one arm, baby bag and baby on the other hip, and I was just going everywhere that I could. So for me to even step out of my door meant that I had to have a certain amount of courage. So I would start posting quotes about courage, and I've been a quote person all my life. I have books and books of quotes as I read through English literature that I really loved and resonated with. I've written poetry for many years, and I don't do as often as I used to now, but that's there as well. So I love the written word. And when I can't find the words to explain what I feel, I'll find it in a movie quote. I'll find it in a piece of literature. I'll find it in song notes, whatever the case may be. So that's where I started. Very randomly, just posting quotes about how I felt and things I wanted to remember to help encourage me throughout the day. And I found that people responded to it. There was no branding or anything to it. I was just kind of posting stuff. Eventually, I found Ebb and this coaching program that both of us were in, and I decided to brand it. And I thought the brand would be the best way to go, mostly because any product that comes under the brand is still an extension of me. So if I can promote who I stand for, what I stand for, the kind of people that may resonate with me, that's not what I was looking for. I was looking for, how do I just present myself? How do you get to know me better? So that's where all the free content started coming out. I branded my page. I started using quotes a little bit more. I started making sure that my face was on the page as much as possible so that people knew that this wasn't a robot that was posting quotes or memes or whatever the case may be. It's a real life person. I wanted to promote the kind of upbringing I had, how I feel about spirituality, how I feel about love in general, how I feel about parenting and kids, because I'm not one thing. I am many things. Believe it or not, when people would ask me what I wanted to be when I grow up, I wouldn't give them the real answer. The real answer was I wanted to be a mom. Do you know why? Because I get to do it all as a mom. I can be a homeschool teacher. I can be a nurse. I can be a chef. I could be, you know, a dressmaker. I could be all of those things. So it didn't limit me. I was able to do all of those things. And that's where the brand came in, because no matter what I create, it's still how I feel about the world. And I'm still teaching from my set of experience, the things that I've lived through. It's not, oh, I read a bunch of Gary Vee quotes today, let me go and post those. It's not that at all. It applies to me. A lot of people will use scheduling to schedule out posts. But honestly, I don't feel good about that. I will get up in the morning, and whenever I feel like posting something, I will. And it's mostly to do with how I feel that day and whatever's happening around me at the moment. So I feel like that's very authentic. I feel like I can project who I am and maybe help people regardless of what time I post, because it's relevant to me, so I'm hoping it's relevant to you. So,
I love that.
The podcast was just to chronicle this whole journey, because yes, I'm a business owner, not a traditional sense business owner. I'm trying. And the more things I try, the better it is for other people to see that I'm trying and failing, but I'm continuing to try. You know who Superwoman is, right?
Of course.
So Superwoman obviously started somewhere, but her posts and her videos now are so polished and so cool that I can't imagine how I could become like her. There is no gradual from the beginning, because what happens is when you get really good at something, you delete all the ugly ones. And I didn't want that. So even to this day, I started off with Facebook Live audio. I'd go live for about 15, 20 minutes about whatever happened that day, how I felt about it, and then what I was doing to move forward in my business. I don't edit it. You will hear me yawn. It's quite embarrassing, actually. But the point is, if I'm doing all this late at night, because that's when us moms and dads can actually get some work done when the kids are asleep, you know that I put in a lot of effort during that day. And I'm exhausted, but I'm still doing it. I'm still showing up. So just hit a milestone yesterday, 350 episodes on my podcast.
Congratulations.
And not much has changed. Thank you so much.
I saw that today. That was incredible.
But it's just a matter of showing up. You're teaching that. I think I mentioned that in the post as well. You, by starting people off on a 21-day challenge, are teaching people it doesn't take that much to set aside a minute at some point in your life to just say what's on your mind and then get back off. Like, for me, because it's live and it's uncut, it's unedited, I get to say what's on my mind, leave it all on the podcast, and then walk away from it. And it's only 20 minutes. Next is exercising. I got to work on that.
One of the things I'm starting to do recently is at the end of the day, and I heard this through Edmila again, give yourself praise for what you accomplished that day. Is that something you do?
I think that's part of the whole Night Owl podcast thing, because I get to run down all the things I did that day. And whether it's good or bad, I did a lot. I do a lot more than most want to do. There is a habit, not a habit, it's the culture in Singapore. If you have children, you have a maid. They live in the house with you. They take care of your kids. They pick them up from school. They cook your food, clean your clothes, clean the house, all of those things. So me, I'm throwing that idea out the window a little bit and upsetting a lot of people, because I don't have a maid. I'm a single mom. It's me and my kid. And even with work, I still make it home in time to pick her up from school, make dinner that night, or make it ahead of time, and do all the things our mothers and our grandmothers did way back when.
And you enjoy
it. Yes, I do. I love it. And when you have that mentality, you realize how much space you have for other things that you could be doing. I talk a lot about multitasking, as in I use all of my electronic appliances to help me out. If the laundry is going while I am cleaning the house with a vacuum cleaner or broom or mop, whatever, that means two things are happening at the same time. It's not like the old days where I had to wash everything by hand. I can turn it on and leave it be. It does its thing. I just have to make sure that I'm there when it cuts off so I can put the clothes out to dry. We don't do dryers here. We just hang everything out to dry, which is awesome. But it's that mentality. I have the time. I can find the time. I can figure it out, that people have lost. People would rather come home, and I know, you're tired, you want to wind down. The first thing you do is sit on the couch, throw your bag on the floor, turn on the TV. How much time do we lose just watching TV? It kind of like disappears on you, you forget. I mean, I binge-watched Lucifer. Both of us sat down and watched Lucifer, and I want to get to the end. And suddenly when I got to the end, I was like, man, I have a lot of time, what do I do now? So yes, there is time if you see it that way. I found that a lot of times you get what you're looking for. It just depends on what you're looking for.
No, that's great. And don't you feel that when you have so much going on in your day that the capacity is enormous? We have so much capacity to do so much every single day that I find it, it's almost infectious. Like I want to, like tomorrow I want to do more than I did today. And, yes. you know, this year I want to write 3 books, you know, and not just one. So it's like, as I get older, I feel like I want to do more and more. And I just wonder if you feel the same.
I do. And I do want to ask you this question. So you wrote a book and now you're looking to write 3 more. Do you realize how difficult it was for you to wrap your mind around the fact that you wanted to write a book in the first place? And once you did it, you were like, okay, that wasn't as hard as I thought. Now you're going to triple it and see if you can write 3 books. And people don't realize that. I didn't know if I could cook a whole Thanksgiving dinner, you know, 3 hours or 4 hours before before the actual meal itself. But unless I try, I won't know exactly what I'm capable of. You know what I mean? I wasn't sure if I could launch t-shirts until I went ahead and I did it ass backwards. I had the design. I just printed the t-shirts. I word of mouthed it. And you know what? Okay, it worked. So now I know what it takes to do it the first time. If I want people to order through the website, I know what the process is. So I can reverse engineer it and make sure that I don't miss any steps. But most people would be like, oh, I can't sell t-shirts until I have WooCommerce set up and PayPal and Stripe. And I have to have the landing page. This is just an excuse. Just do it. Just go
exactly.
Through it. Just start.
And it's taking that action and just doing it. And I think once you do it, once you take action on one thing, then it leads to another. And
exactly.
Again, you feel like you could take on the world. And that's good. I mean, I think it's good to be at capacity and then to push yourself even more, you know, exactly. Now everyone's not cut out for it and that's okay. But those of us who are helping to not only change our world and those people around us, but passing that on to others. Like this year, right now, I'm helping 3 people write their books and I love
it. That's awesome. That's awesome. But you also know from your own standpoint, you've been through the process. You know what to look out for now.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Well, Pika, this has been great. I could talk to you all night. We will definitely have you back.
I would love that.
And I really appreciate all your time. But before I let you go, I do have one last question.
Sure. And,
you're very young, so I don't even know if you've even thought about this yet. But I do like to ask everyone, and that is, what do you want your legacy to be?
That's part of building my brand, actually. I realize that at some point, I'm not immortal. I'm going to pass on at some point. And for all intents and purposes, this brand is for my daughter. I know everybody says that, but the podcast is for her to understand that I struggled some days and I couldn't get it together. And some days I didn't want to show up. And some days I just felt like crap. And if at least she has something of me to remember me by, to help push her forward, if I can do that for her, I know it will help other people as well. And I'm very, very blessed to have this young lady in my life who she's just like me and she didn't have to be. And she's very endearing. She has no trouble with, you know, personal space. She loves being around people. She wants to help people. She's like the little mom on the playground. She really does take care of everybody. And at the end of the day, if I can say that I was a part of her life for the better. I wasn't just an observer. I wasn't just another person in the house. I was actively a part of her life. If she can think about her childhood and remember what it's like to have a loving parent, then she can replicate that for her parent, for her children. So I want to start a movement or an idea at least that, okay, our parents didn't know. And I didn't know what I was doing when I first became a parent. But as I go along, I'm seeing what works and what doesn't work because I'm watching my child. I'm letting her tell me what doesn't work. And it's going to be different for every child. It's going to be different for every parent. There are going to be moments where I revert into my mom and I do the very Asian mom thing and yell and scream until I feel better, which actually isn't, you know, addressing the problem. There are so many things that love can really help us learn that is my legacy. That would be my legacy. I want her to feel comfortable loving people, whether they love you back or not, whether they can give you anything or do anything for you or not. That's not the point of love. The point of love is just to spread it everywhere. The point of love is your kindness, just to let people know you see them. I see you. I see you're upset and I feel sorry for you. And if there's anything I can do, I'm here to help. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I don't want to be known for anything else. I don't care about the t-shirts. I do, but not that much.
Well, Pika Rasaya, you are a rock star. You are a superwoman. And we appreciate you so much for being part of our American Real family and for coming on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me, Roger. Really, it's been a great bunch of conversations you and I have had, and they've all been very enlightening to me as well. I learn something every time I talk to you.
Likewise, and we will continue to do so. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks for tuning into American Real. Be sure to visit our website, AmericanReal.tv, or search for us on iTunes or YouTube for past episodes. While you're there, please rate us or leave us a review, as that helps others find our show. I am truly grateful and appreciate all of your support. At American Real, we're on a mission to help as many people around the world fulfill their dreams and obtain their goals. If you'd like to be part of our inner circle or want one-on-one coaching, check out the American Real Learning Academy, where we have self-help groups and courses so you can build the best you. We also have a new Facebook group where you can connect with high achievers from around the world. If you want to go even further, maybe you're determined to write your own book or launch your own podcast, contact me today to see if we could help. You can reach me through Instagram or Facebook, or email me directly at roger@americanreal.tv. And speaking of podcasting, our next course will be starting soon. So if you're interested in launching your own podcast, join me at Podcast Your Passion. I'll take you through my 8-week course where I'll mentor you to build a world-class podcast. I'm only taking on a small group of people who want to share their passion through broadcasting, where I'll have you up on iTunes and YouTube within weeks so you can podcast your passion. Click on the link below for more information. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.